All right, so the final style that we're going to talk about is the C style. And throughout this series, what we've been doing is we've been really digging beneath the surface to find out what drives the behaviors that we see with these styles. So with the C style, for instance, it's pretty observable that these folks tend to be pretty private. They tend to be pretty cautious, more systematic, analytical, right? But what's going on emotionally and cognitively that's driving them to act that way? And so that's what we're trying to get at today. So the C style is the last one we're going to talk about. And we've been using a particular framework. And that framework assumes that we have a really innate drive to feel valuable. From the time we're very, very young, we're just driven to feel like we're worthwhile, like we have some meaning or some value in the world. And we make different decisions about what's going to make us valuable. And so we talked about for the D, I'm valuable if I achieve, or for the I, I'm valuable if people pay attention to me, or the S, I'm valuable if I help people out. And so for the C, we have other assumptions that have been made about, perhaps very, very early in life about what's going to make me valuable as a person. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. And that's the framework we're going to use. And one of the first assumptions, one of the really core assumptions you see time and time again when you talk to people with the C style and you dig beneath the surface, is this assumption that I'm valuable if I'm right. And you can almost, it's almost even more accurate to turn that around and say, I'm invaluable or I lose my worth if I'm wrong. I must avoid being wrong. I cannot make mistakes. Now, to be clear, this is not a matter of arrogance. It's not, I must be more right than you. I have to be the one on top. It might evolve into that, and that might be true for some people with the C style, but at the most basic root level, it reflects a core belief that I should not be wrong. And the word should is underscored there. It's this should as a moral imperative. It's almost as if it's sinful or unethical to be wrong. If I produce something, it absolutely must be of high quality. If I make a statement, it must be true, preferably with information to back it up. Now, that's definitely not true of all of us. For a lot of us, we can make a flippant comment, make a statement, maybe exaggerate a little to make a point, and if we're shown to be wrong, it rolls off our back. We're okay being corrected. For people with the C style, though, this is completely unacceptable. And it's not only a threat to their worth, as I said before, though, it's almost as if it's a moral imperative. And so, for a lot of people with the C style, everything that they put their effort into must be unassailable and refined. They won't allow flaws in things that they've poured themselves into. Now, when I hear people describe the C style, they often talk about them as very detail-oriented. And while that's true of a number of people with a C style, in the research we've done, and we've done this a couple of different times, when we ask people to describe how detail-oriented they are, it's not always true that these folks describe themselves as being detail-oriented. And I think what's going on here is we confuse the need for accuracy with the need for details. And so if we have someone who's high C and they're very concrete, yes, accuracy does mean getting the details right, getting the specifics right. On the other hand, if we have someone who's very abstract thinking, right, the details are less relevant. Accuracy is more in terms of the big picture. And so there's this classic concept of the absent-minded professor. We can all get this image in our mind, right? And that person is not particularly interested in the details, right? This is where we get the, absent-minded. But where this person is precise is in terms of his theories or his models, right? So just a little bit of caution about describing people with a C style as universally detail-oriented. I know some very, conceptual, abstract thinking Cs who aren't very detail-oriented at all. And, on the other hand, I know some people who are high in I who actually are very detail-oriented. The focus then is on accuracy, and the focus is really on avoiding making mistakes. And so when they're confronted with a mistake, if it's a situation where it's an undeniable mistake, there's irrefutable proof that it's a mistake, they really do show a lot of embarrassment and almost some shame. But anything shy of that, what I often see happening, and this isn't always the case, but a lot of times what I see happening is instead of admit the mistake, the person will reframe the parameters of the situation rather than admit they were wrong. And so, we've all been in a meeting with someone who's high C, and they don't speak up a lot, do they? And one of the things that's going on is that people who are high C are not going to speak up, are not going to put their opinion out there, are going to put it on the line unless they're certain of it. And so particularly if you have a meeting with some very fast-talking, fast-thinking people where the conversation is constantly evolving, the person with the C style is kind of struggling to catch up to gain that level of certainty that they need to speak up, whereas other people don't need that level of certainty to speak up. It's slightly, somewhat similar to what you see in S's, but usually a lot more pronounced. And so this caution that they show in their tasks, with this assumption that I must be right, I must not make a mistake, right? They tend to be very careful, is just as applicable in the social arena. And so most people that I would say, this is pretty generalizable for people with the C style, is that they tend not to like mingling with strangers, right? Going into a situation where they don't know a lot of people. And the reason for that is social situations tend to be unpredictable. The social rules are really difficult to get your head around, right? If I'm doing a task, if I'm doing a job, I can get my head around the rules for the task, the parameters for the task, but a social situation, the conversations can go anywhere, right? And there's no amount of preparation that I can do to ensure how I'm going to come across in a social situation, and so I try to avoid them. All right. Usually, most of the effort is put into coming across as appropriate, coming across as socially appropriate, whereas someone else's effort is on, coming across as the center of attention, or maybe just as getting to know other people, having fun. The C is really processing what's appropriate. Now, this isn't necessarily true for all C's, but it is frequently the case, particularly if they're surrounded by a number of people that they don't really know well. Unconsciously, there's a real feeling of a threat anytime a conversation is initiated with someone they don't know really well. And the emotional, the level of the emotional threat really varies with how well they do know the person, even if it's not apparent to them. They've got this really strong filter when they're speaking to make sure that they're being accurate, or in this case probably the better word is appropriate, which can be just exhausting, and they may not realize how much work they're doing behind the scenes. And so when someone with a C style imagines going into one of those situations or comes out of it at the end of the day and they're exhausted, right, at how much work they did, really it was this mental work of processing the information behind the scenes. And oftentimes they'll really report worrying about running out of things to say, and you can cope with this in a lot of different ways, but oftentimes it's really just retreating and allowing the awkward silences, not feeling very good about them, but allowing them It's not always the case. You know, those of you who remember the, I think it was 1980s show Cheers, there was the character Cliff Clavin, right? He's a pretty consummate C character who was pretty vocal, though, with, you know, hiding behind this range of facts that he's throwing out. Or, you know, I can think of other instances where someone who's very clearly C trying to give off these more extroverted I behaviors and kind of trying to force it. And it oftentimes does come across as very awkward. And so, as with the case with social situations, we often see a dislike of having to improvise when they're given a project and there's not much time to prepare and wrap their head around it. It's pretty stressful. Having time to plan means that you can ensure that you're going to get things right. And so we want a lot of time to gather the information we need to make a decision. Oftentimes, wanting kind of an unrealistic level of certainty before making a decision, which can lead to that, you know, the old cliche analysis paralysis. And so one of the things that C's are often attributed to C's is this real emphasis on logic, right? And this is, you know, the best, not only does it seem like the best way to reach an accurate conclusion in their minds, but logic is really knowable, is really predictable. But that's not to say that logic in their minds is just an, you know, a defense mechanism, or is just a way of protecting their rightness, right? Most people that I know with a high C style do see a real beauty in logic, right? Their desire for accuracy and logic isn't all defensive, right? The elegance that they see in logical arguments is really satisfying on an emotional level. For them, problem solving can be particularly enjoyable, particularly when there's a right answer that you can arrive at. And so at their best, when we have someone who's really spent a lifetime, you know, trying to observe and to understand, right, all of this practice, right, all this information that they've developed really contributes to a great deal, potentially a great deal of wisdom. Okay, so that's the belief that I'm valuable if I'm right, or I'm valuable if I avoid being wrong. A second assumption that I often see with people who have a strong C style is this belief that I'm valuable if I'm self-sufficient, or I must be self-sufficient. I must have no vulnerabilities. Right? I shouldn't have to depend on anyone else. And so they're really reluctant to ask for help, and they'll really work on figuring it out. You know, if there's a problem, they'll work on figuring it out for themselves. And there's a bunch of different reasons for this. I think all equally valid. You know, one, they really want to gain the expertise of having figured it out. Two, they don't want to bother other people. Right? You know, another reason is they don't want to admit that they have a need for help. Right, going back to this self-sufficiently. See, and fourth, they really have a need to master challenges or master a problem that they've been trying to solve. And we'll get into that idea of mastery in a little bit. And this need for self-sufficiency, or this ideal of self-sufficiency, is most easily preserved if you have, if you insulate yourself, if you have a kind of a bit of a protective bubble around yourself. And so, you know, it really requires effort on their part to dissolve this bubble and to let other people have access to their space. They've got this kind of protective perimeter around themselves oftentimes. You know, obviously we're talking metaphorically here, and usually it's on an unconscious level, but it's kind of like a comfort zone. And so when someone with a strong C style has to allow another person into that perimeter, There's a sense, and again, even if it's unconscious, there's a sense of an intrusion or discomfort, right? Even if they're not aware of it. And so they really have to gear up their energy to deal with this outsider. You know, unlike, you know, if we contrast this with a really strong I person, right, who welcomes the outsider, and they generally don't require any internal preparation at all, right? They're usually more than ready for this external stimulation. It's a lot more easy to startle the high C person because they're not prepared for this emotionally. And so likewise, when this high C person has to go outside of her comfort zone, you know, she often feels the need to put on sort of a mask, to bump up her energy level, to act a little more friendly, because there's a sense that her normal, quiet, reflective self isn't really appropriate. And so, you know, maybe she can do it for a short period of time, but it really is draining of her energy doing this. Again, whereas the I person, it's no drain at all, right? There's no energy going on in the background preparing and processing. And so they're really looking oftentimes to return to the safety of their, you know, protective perimeter as soon as possible. You know, and here I'm talking about more socially aware, you know, someone who maybe has a strong C style is very socially aware of, you know, the fact that you're supposed to make small talk, you're supposed to avoid awkward silences. But then there are certainly other people with the strong C style who aren't as socially aware, or at least the pressure of being socially appropriate is not as strong as their need or their desire to remain silent. And so there's still, though, in that case, even though they're not doing the small talk, they're not showing the energy outwardly, there still is internally a lot of stress and a lot of pressure going on beneath the surface. And so overall, we're left with someone who, for the most part, tends to be pretty private, not quick to share personal information with other people, certainly not revealing much about themselves until they know someone else really well. And even then, oftentimes, they're more likely to share their, objective facts, because they're not used to processing their experiences, their emotions externally. They do all that internally. And so, it's not a conscious withholding of their experiences, right? It's just that's how they process things, is internally. And we can actually dig even a little further down into the motives that drive this desire for self-sufficiency. There's a number of psychoanalysts. I'm thinking of a woman named Karen Horney right now, or Horney. Either way, it's probably an unfortunate name. But she writes about, and I've seen this in other places as well, is that this belief that I need, you know, this early on developed belief that I need to detach myself from needs. Right? So I shouldn't have strong needs. There's a policy of restriction, particularly a restriction of wishes. Nothing should be so important to me that I can't do without it. So I'm willing to settle for a life that's free of pain and friction, which is maybe the positive side, but it's also a life that's free of zest. They've removed themselves from that inner battlefield. And when she writes about some patients that she's worked with, is that they almost feel like an onlooker at themselves and their lives, and they have all of these observations about themselves, and this creates a person who's rather astute and develops a picture of themselves that's really filled with a wealth of candid observations about how things work. Sometimes to the sense that they, you know, as I mentioned before, these observations and this wisdom, they develop a strong sense of aesthetics, a strong appreciation for aesthetics, even though it's a more detached appreciation than the strong emotional at least consciously emotional appreciation than we might see in some other people. Now, of course, we're speculating on a really much deeper level here, and I don't think there's any psychoanalysts in the room. But I think we can definitely agree that most people with this high C style have a strong desire for self-control, and this belief that I can't necessarily control the situation, but I can control myself. And like I said before, they put a really strong emphasis on being appropriate. So they don't show a lot of emotion, part of this self-control. Usually when you talk to folks and you ask them what's going on and why is it difficult for you to do this, is that this self-control is almost impossible for them, and it's been so practiced and so developed that it's difficult or impossible for them to drop even if they wanted to. And so when they observe, for instance, someone else exhibiting strong emotion, right, they really feel embarrassed for that other person. And so the person with the I style might just think, them crying or getting upset really is a showing of how open they are. Or the person with the strong D style might, who gets enraged, might feel it's a show of strength or power. The person, the observer with the C style, is more looking at that and feeling embarrassed for that person, as they've given up the one thing that they truly do have control over, which is themselves, and they've made themselves vulnerable, which is embarrassing. And I think almost as interesting is how this need for self-sufficiency drives their desire for autonomy. All right. And people with the C style, we often see, have a real preference for working alone. And there's a variety of different reasons for this. One of them is that it allows them control the quality of their work. They take pride in the quality of their work and ensure that things get done the way they should get done. But it also gives them freedom from the control of another person. They certainly usually have little interest in controlling other people, but they definitely don't want to be controlled by another person. And it's almost humiliating to have that sense that another person is controlling you. Similar for the D style, unlike the S style, who doesn't find it nearly as humiliating, or the I style, which is a little more open to it. And we often find that they're almost hypersensitive to influence or any sort of coercion. Their immediate instinct is to resist any sort of pressure. And so, again, this ties back to their strong desire to have their space that they control. And oftentimes it's a space where they can get absorbed in a project, free of other people, and have time to analyze and really dig into something in depth and really focus on that internal world without interference from the outside. And many times I'll find, some pretty conscientious C folks who will put off tasks that involve, that mean involving other people, like making a phone call, particularly to someone they don't know really well. And so they'd much rather spend their time getting absorbed in that task, enjoy the process of problem solving, and they may enjoy having other people around, but just not necessarily that constant contact. They like having that space that they can control. Now, this more detached nature doesn't mean that they're indifferent to other people's needs or they're callous. In fact, oftentimes when I'll ask someone with the C style, they consider themselves to be very considerate. Whereas for someone else, the idea of being considerate involves being thoughtful and empathizing with someone, or giving someone a compliment, or going out of their way to help them out or include them in a situation. For the person with the C, they consider themselves to be helpful if they stay out of the other person's way, if they do their best to help another person avoid problems, right? And particularly if they respect another person's rights. They go out of their way really to be fair and respectful to other people and are really conscious about bothering other people. And even though they might not be as diplomatic as someone with the S style, they tend to be very diplomatic to avoid tension. And so they may actually cave in on what they know to be true or what they feel strongly in order to keep the peace. And so we have these conflicting motives of accuracy on the one hand and stability on the other. But the chaos, you know, the reason for that conflict is because even though stability, or even though accuracy is a really strong priority for them, the chaos of conflict is really unsettling. You know, seeing other people showing these unbridled emotions, even if it's not directed towards them, creates a sense of discomfort. Now, as I talked about before, embarrassment for the other person. And if it is directed towards them, the unpredictability of this tension or anger that's directed towards them is so unsettling that they're oftentimes likely to just retreat from this situation. Now, you know, I will say as a little bit of a caveat here that that's not always the case. You know, conflict is somewhat predictable by DISC, but conflict, I think, touches a pretty unique place in our past and our history and our emotional composition. You know, there's some people I know with a C style that actually get pretty aggressive when they're challenged or negativity, you know, anger is directed towards them. But as a rule, most of the time, it's this tendency, this drive to withdraw from the situation. And after they've withdrawn from the situation, you know, you often find that in their heads, they'll go through their arguments in a logical fashion, protecting their own interests, of course, in a way that we all do. And if there's no safe opportunity for getting their needs met in the conflict, they may appear to cave, but oftentimes will resort to more passive-aggressive methods of getting their way, or at least feeling like they haven't been coerced, haven't been dominated. And so, you know, the pocket veto, or, you know, dragging their feet, or overwhelming other people with facts, or withholding information, any method that they can do to frustrate the other person and to feel like at least they have some semblance of power or control over themselves in that experience. Now, of course, this is absolutely more true of someone who's a strong C and is also very immature. Someone who's a strong C and is personally developed, very mature, is a lot less likely to do these things. Is a lot more likely to handle conflict in an appropriate way. And so then returning to the big picture, the idea that I must be self-sufficient or I must have no vulnerabilities has its downsides, you know, as we've talked about. You know, at its worst, you know, for the person who has this belief system, their fear of vulnerability leaves them kind of developmentally stagnated. They're unable to admit their weaknesses. And that can really hinder how much they're able to grow, how much they're able to look at themselves and be honest with themselves. There is, however, a positive side. If we have someone who's really grown and accepted their inevitable vulnerability, that is, they've outgrown that belief, that lifetime of training that they've had has given them a heightened ability to detach themselves from the immediate temptations and pleasures that so often interfere with our long-term happiness. They have a healthy sense of moderation, both in terms of their behavior, but even more subtly in terms of the emotional moderation that's necessary to develop sustainable contentment over a long period of time. Okay, and now the final or third area that I want to talk about in terms of our framework is this assumption or belief that I'm valuable if I'm competent. I'm valuable if I'm an expert. I'm valuable if I'm knowledgeable. And first, right off the bat here, I want to say that expertise, and more to the point, the quest for expertise can be a really, really healthy motivation, you know, particularly in an instance where it's a person who has a genuine, you know, sincere curiosity about a topic, and they pursue it and develop that expertise. But there's also an ego motivation for developing expertise that for some people with the C style, it's a very tempting path to go down. And expertise has the promise of cementing our worth. You know, it shores up those vulnerabilities, it closes up those vulnerabilities that could have been exposed. And so here, we've got a chance to be on the offensive rather than the defensive. We have to, you know, we can go out on the offensive as the expert instead of being on the defensive, hold up in our comfort zone or our defended perimeter that we've created. So this is where the C has a chance to get their pride needs met. You know, pride or self-aggrandizing, it feels good. And, you know, and we all know, you know, people, when they describe someone as arrogant, right, it's almost universally negative, right? We all know that's a negative characteristic. But we all engage in arrogant thoughts from time to time. And the reason is that it feels good. It gives us kind of a shot in the arm of we're valuable. And that feels really positive. And so being the expert allows the high C person, right, to dip into that well of pride, to experience that positive, you know, even if it only lasts a short period of time, those positive feelings, the same way someone else is getting their pride needs met by being the top dog, or by winning, or getting praise or attention. And in even more unhealthy situations, expertise can allow some C individuals to hide behind that knowledge, hide behind that expertise, not expose themselves. And the quest for, or the desire for mastery, is a really strong instinct for not only the C, but also for this D style that we've seen. But they almost approach mastery or think about mastery in different ways. You know, for the D, mastery is mastery over the environment, to be recognized as being in control, being able to call the shots the way they see them. For the C, however, the drive for mastery is more about mastering a skill or mastering excellence. And in a lot of respects, this guides the way that the high C person judges others by their competence or by their expertise. They really avoid putting their faith in people that don't live up to their standards, and particularly are really annoyed by people who make illogical arguments, as if it's violating their entire value system. Is I've built this system of values on logic, and so by you making a logical argument and standing behind that, that's nulling that entire value system. And to many of them, they can almost describe it as if it's a personal assault, and they're having a reaction that almost bleeds into self-righteousness. And because oftentimes there is this emotional reaction, these normally reserved people don't have much of a problem speaking up or questioning ideas that don't strike them as solid. And, you know, they're doing it in a very matter-of-fact way that might feel kind of critical or insensitive to others. And when they sense that someone is trying to persuade them using emotions. There's, you know, this whole host of red flags that just go up all over the place. You know, not only because they're not relying on logic, but because also it's tipping off this other point of defensiveness, which is, I don't want to be manipulated. And in fact, it's humiliating to be manipulated, and I'm not going to let it happen. And we can also see a certain stubbornness oftentimes with people with the C style. And it's almost an assumption as if my logic is the best. And they may not realize, particularly if it's a more concrete person, they may not realize that two logical people can actually reach very different conclusions, even though they're both using very solid logic. You know, they may assume that since they use logic to reach their beliefs, that it's unassailable. It makes sense to them. You know, it's thoroughly, thoroughly defensible. And they may underestimate the actual role that their values and their experience and their self-interest has played in choosing the facts that they emphasize and the direction that their logic takes. And as a consequence, we sometimes end up with a person who's very reluctant to take another person's point of view. And as I mentioned just a minute ago, they can be very matter-of-fact about this, particularly when they're correcting another person. I can give them feedback in a way that's very matter-of-fact. And they may actually be surprised to learn that the other person was hurt or offended when their intention was to simply be objective. And whereas their attention is solely focused on the need for accuracy or the need for the truth, they either minimize or completely dismiss or miss that when you're in a conversation with another person, the other person has a variety of other needs as well, what most other people do. And they have needs, for instance, that they're not even aware of, but someone might have the need to be respected, to feel like their ideas were valued, to feel like they belong. And the person with the C style is solely focused on the need for accuracy or truth, and so they can deliver messages in this very matter-of-fact way and be caught off guard that someone received it as a criticism or an insult when they were acting perfectly rationally and doing nothing in their minds to offend the other person. And in the same way that they can, in many instances, be detached or cut off from their own emotional experiences, they can be unattentive to the fact that other people have emotional needs. You know, for instance, in the area of giving praise, they don't give it too readily, and I think there's a couple of reasons why this is the case. You know, one is because there really is a level of intimacy involved in giving someone a compliment or giving them praise that can feel uncomfortable. Now, someone who is in let's say who is more of an I style, it may not feel very intimate, you know, or unusually intimate to do that. But the person in the C style and to some extent as well in the D style, this does feel like a more intimate, almost for lack of a better word, kind of icky sense of vulnerability or opening up or connection with another person, and particularly in a work situation that feels uncomfortable. But a second more surface reason for not giving praise is oftentimes they simply don't recognize that other people have a need for praise, is that another person's work will speak for itself, right? Being right is its own reward. You don't need other people to point out to you that you're right or that you're accurate or that you did a high quality job. Even though, on a deeper level, they really do appreciate the praise as well. They may not need it to be gushing, but I haven't met a person who's high in C who doesn't like receiving a compliment or doesn't like being recognized for their contributions. But they're much less likely to think about those needs in other people and to act on it. But as I said before, this isn't to say that they're callous. You know, f- for them, their version of being a good citizen or a good coworker or a good friend is to be fair, is to not intrude on another person's right, to respect the other person's freedom, and chiefly to avoid burdening the other person, because this is what they want from other people. And so this drive to be competent or to be the expert certainly has some downsides and some unhealthy motivators, but it also definitely has a very, very positive aspect to it as well. You know, particularly when the insecurities that drove a person to become an expert have shed or fallen away, when that person becomes more mature, what remains is that quest for knowledge. You know, they have a strong curiosity and discipline to follow through on the tough questions. You know, getting the kind of knowledge that doesn't come easily, where the casual dabbler in these matters kind of loses interest when they meet too much resistance, when the answers don't come quickly enough. The C person really continues to push through because they have a genuine desire to learn and to know and to solve problems. All right, so that's the C style. And there really is just one final thing that I want to say, because this is the last session on this topic, and this goes for all of the DISC styles that we've talked about. We've been using some generalizations about tendencies or patterns or trends with a particular style, but hopefully it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway, is that I would actually be surprised if, let's say, for the C style, that all of the qualities or characteristics we talked about were true for a particular individual, right? Most likely, I would expect that most of them would be true, but there's probably a couple of areas where it's not right. You know, we haven't hit the nail right on the head. I think DISC is most powerfully used, and as well, you know, in parentheses, avoiding misuse, when it's used as a way to generate hypotheses about people's behaviors and the reason for those behaviors. And so what we have as a tool is that, let's say, for instance, with the C style, is that we've talked about all of these trends and patterns. If we see some behavior, right, or we know someone's a C, we have these lists of hypotheses in our head, right, and so they more readily come to mind. And so we can expedite the process of helping someone to understand themselves, or to help someone move beyond a problem pattern, or work out a difficult situation with a coworker. And we're not always going to be right. You know, we have to listen to the person to hear what's their reaction to the hypothesis. Sometimes the person's not aware of their true motivations, but at the very least, DISC gives us a starting point. And for my money, that's really one of the most valuable things that comes with this model and using this tool with other people.